The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 375. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside he only does everything, Colin Moriarty.
It's good to be here with you. Go Islanders.
You think you figured out how to put Clementine's backpack
on?
Yeah,
I did. I did figure it out.
How'd you do it?
One of the straps comes up.
Oh, well, then there you go. I was just afraid of breaking it.
But this action figure, by the way, cost $25.
There's an unboxing of it on IGN from me and Tim and I.
Sorry, that's just a crazy ripoff.
It's a lot of money for an action figure. I mean, any action figure, really.
See, this is the thing, though. Over here, of course. Yeah. In Marty Sleva's never-rotating third chair, the Italian meatball, Brian Alpitano.
Rap. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming in. You're off. You're on vacation.
Yeah, IGN is like sort of closed, but yeah. We still have stuff going on.
Skeleton crew, they call it. Skeleton crew. We have Podcast Beyond never takes a holiday. You know that.
That's true. We have this theory that basically if nobody worked at IGN for 6 months, articles would still keep going up. Videos would still keep going up.
All this schedule.
There'd be some Up at Noon episode that you and I did 3 years ago that somebody just accidentally published.
Yeah.
We forgot to put up, but we put a date in there, and like 3 years later, and it just goes up. So we'll be good for a while. It's, you know, life after people.
So now back to this Walking Dead Clementine Telltale Games action figure, right? $25.
Colin is meticulously.
Colin
like,
is assembling it,
taking apart,
putting it all back together. The thing about you were knocking the size of it for $25.
Yeah, look at this. Here, I understand it's a scale. She's a little girl.
Okay.
It's still $25 for any action figure is a complete
now
rip-off.
Here's the next thing.
I used to pay $3 for my G.I. Joes,
which were mass produced out of molds and all these different things. Right?
This isn't a mold.
No, stick with me here.
No, that was handmade by.
Make my point before you attack me.
Melissa Hutchinson sits down with a tiny little acrylic
it's
pen.
It's one piece of wood.
This is the whole thing of like with the McFarlane toys in the indies and stuff is that they don't make as many. So I feel like that's how they
my
get,
grandfather
get away charging
that.
More.
I'm disturbed actually when I go. My girlfriend always makes fun of me because I make a beeline when we go to Target to the toys.
You got it.
Just, I do too. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, just because I just want to see what people are playing with, and I always just like looking at the toys.
Uh-huh.
And G.I. Joe's today. You know, they're back, which is great. If I had more money and more, I have the money to buy them, I guess. If I had the room to store them, I'd buy them all. They're like $10 or $12 each.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I remember walking into Child's World on Long Island and buying Alley Viper in 1990 for $2.99. So yeah. I don't know, like, this doesn't account for inflation. People are getting a little greedier out there.
Stuff around the house for the entire day to make $5 to go to Toys R Us and drop $5 on a toy. And that's because you could get a G.I. Joe and like two candy bars for $5 back then.
Not those were the days. No,
but then
you can't get anything.
They were cheaply produced. Like G.I. Joe's, let's not put them on a pedestal here. G.I. Joe's, they had that rubber band that connected their balls to their legs.
Yeah.
And it would break and you'd have to go to your mom and be like, can you fix this? And she'd be like, I don't live in China.
Yeah.
I don't know how this was made.
Yeah, it sucks because their legs got all like.
Yeah, it was
they
just
would
like,
just be like
super loose.
Yeah. Just like real soldiers, you know what happens.
God. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know, this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's PlayStation podcast, the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. Each and every Tuesday, rain or shine, we post it as an MP3 on IGN.com and podcast services around the country / world. Then on Wednesday, the whole video goes up on IGN.com, YouTube.com/IGN, and the completely free IGN PlayStation 4 app.
That's right.
How was everybody's Christmas?
It was good.
Yeah.
Very hectic.
Yeah, you were all over the place. You're traveling, man.
I travel a lot for Christmas, and it's kind of a lot to deal with. I just got married So there's two. It's like I've officially have two families.
Yeah.
And I went to New York City, which is like I love New York City. Like I go there during the holidays. It's historically the best and worst time to be there. Mm. But like it's just a nice place to be. Like they get it. You know. Like here in San Francisco, we have Market Street, and we put up a couple of lights and a couple of feathers and dingleberries. But it's just.
People feathers and dingleberries.
People try to smoke them. It's like it's not really Christmas in San Francisco
definitely.
But so you go to New York City and it's there. But it was hotter. It was nicer there than it was here. So I came back here and it was freezing cold. And you know,
yeah, it's been really cold lately.
But the holidays are good. It's good to be in to be able to travel. That's a good thing to do.
Colin,
what about you guys? You stick around here?
Yeah, we just hang out here. We hung out here. We live together, Colin.
I remember what I did on Christmas. What did I do?
Do you guys give each other presents?
No.
Well,
I bought I bought him the Mega Man Amiibo.
Yeah, so
but I won't be here until February.
There's a mm-hmm. plan and there's a plan in action that I didn't actually think this one through properly, so it's gonna come in January. But
kind of like your Mega Man Amiibo.
Yeah, that's sooner than your Mega Man Amiibo.
Yeah, that's true. But I should have been more on the ball.
I had a great plan for Colin's 30th birthday that I never did. So
what is it?
I can't tell you now. I still might do it. At some point, I will still do this.
Are you saving it for his next 30th birthday?
No, I'll do it for something else another time, thing.
Did you get yourself a new phone?
Maybe I'll just do it. I did. I got the iPhone 6.
I'm actually going to pick one up today.
You getting the 6 or the 6 Plus?
I'm on the fence. I don't know how big I want this giant thing in my pocket.
Right. I went 6.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it fine. Every so often, I'm like, what if I would have gone 6 Plus?
Yeah.
I would say don't live not knowing.
Yeah.
I would say make the jump.
I might go Plus. That's what I was thinking.
Tim has it. Everybody who has it, with the exception of one girl on Twitter, likes it a lot. I'm talking about my personal, the people I've talked to.
Right.
Everyone seems like they're really happy they got the 6 Plus. Pablo likes the 6 Plus. He's Pablo.
Really?
Smartest guy in the office.
He's a handyman.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what'd you do on Christmas, Greg? Do you cook on Christmas?
Yeah, we did. We did flank steaks with something else. I forget. Christine made a pie again, I think.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I had my brother-in-law made an 18-ounce prime rib.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody brought, they do it very smart. Everybody brings different dishes. You know, it's a potluck, I guess. And somebody was like, oh, I brought these mashed potatoes, and I'm eating them. Like, these are amazing. And they're like, oh, it's Paula Deen's recipe. There's like 12 sticks
of
butter.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm out.
See, that was...
yeah, you gain 15 pounds over 2 weeks, and then you spend the rest of the year
trying to
pretending
lose
you'll lose it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's
see,
good
the time. Awesome thing is leading up to Christmas, Christine was off or working from home, so she could go to the grocery store. And I think Christmas Eve, she made mini Philly cheesesteaks. And I was like, God damn.
Mini?
Yeah. Like we had like little mini Kaiser roll kind of things, you know what I mean?
Oh, they're
so
good. I want those for dinner tonight. That sounds amazing. All right.
All right, everybody. That's been Podcast Beyond episode. No, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news.
Time for some news.
News in the Christmas. Last news of 2014.
No more news in 2014.
I kind of wonder, you know, just candidly, the last episode and this episode, we're here for you listeners, and we understand that you want to listen to Podcast Beyond, but there's so little going on.
Yeah.
But
that I feel like the episodes are a little more boring.
They want to hear our dumb stuff, and they want to hear us pontificate.
Here's
on
the thing.
Questions.
I do a lot of podcasts, as you guys know. So do you guys. Here's the thing about podcasts. They are almost always better than the sounds in your own mind.
Yeah, that's a good point.
No one ever listens to a podcast for information about the breaking news of last week.
I don't know.
Week.
I kind of feel like with all the – I kind of disagree. I think that –
people are here for personality and perspective.
Well, that's true.
Damn, nailed it. Clem's up. She's got everything in her hands.
That's true that they're here for perspective and they're here because if you want perspective – who's better to give you perspective on your life than me?
Yeah.
Almost anyone.
Cheesy Queso wrote in with a question. I assure you he wants it answered. He's not like, oh, man, I wish they didn't do the show today.
But I guarantee you that there are people driving around. You know, a lot of people listen to the show, and I'm sure that there's a segment of people that drive around in doing their job. I picture a FedEx man or something guy that's going from job to job.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what's going on because he's always working or he's got a family or whatever, and so these things are enlightening to him. So I just think about, specifically with the Roper Report, that it's lean pickings in December generally.
There's got to be more informational podcasts out there than us.
Well,
there's got to be better informational podcasts than podcasts.
About PlayStation, I don't know.
I like how you said there's got to be, like you weren't sure. I would guess that there are probably 100,000 more informational podcasts than any of the ones that any of us are on.
Really?
They're not really those. I mean,
our hypothetical abortion podcast?
This is the only one that tries to be informational, I think.
Yeah.
Sure, there's news here, but there's also, mini cheesesteak recipes and stuff.
We should put
that. I will say that the insight, the knowledge, and the facts on Podcast Beyond are almost insurmountable for any other podcast. in terms
based
of...
Based on PlayStation?
No, just on anything at all.
Oh, on anything, yeah. Period.
Okay, anything, period.
Yep.
Cheesesteaks, Clementine, PlayStation, Islanders, Mega Man.
Yeah, all the things that are in. I'm only kidding. This podcast is terrible. Number one on the Roper Report.
Number one! How many items are there?
There are 5 items on the list
this
week.
A baker's dozen.
A baker's 6.
Number one. If you might have noticed this. The PlayStation Network was on the receiving end of a massive DDoS attack.
You might have noticed.
During the holidays, it forced the network down for days on end. Since December 24th, PSN's connectivity has been spotty, with few people able to access network services on the 25th or 26th of December. By the 27th, the network started to come back, but it's been intermittently down since then. Xbox Live also went down due to the same attack, but was brought up quicker and more stably than Sony's counterpart.
Yep.
Shocking.
This story is horrible.
It sucks.
It's horrible on so many levels.
Were there reaching effect? Were you in the New York, the tri-state area at this time? Were there far-reaching effects out there? Were people talking about this?
Yeah, people were rioting.
Yeah,
just in the tri-state area.
It was mostly about the police, but it was also kind of
there
about
was like one guy in a PlayStation shirt.
But this is. To me, it's like, I don't know, the guys that did this, what are they called? Lizard Gang? They sound like a team from Star Fox.
They're the ones claiming credit, yes.
They were asked why they did it, and they were like, well, they did it for the lulz. Like, which is just like...
That was the weird thing. It seems like when there was the hacks beforehand, there was like, we're doing this because of X. And this one was just like, we want to screw with everybody.
We
want to
screw with people. Yeah.
And that was the sad part for me, is like, Christine was talking to her family, right? And she like, oh, you're doing like the phone calls you do on Christmas to talk to everybody and the relatives and the cousins. And one of her uncles was like, oh, yeah, and we bought the system, but we're going to have to return it. It's broken. She's like, why? And she's like, well, we turn it on and we can't find the network. Something's wrong with it. And she had to be like, no, it's this. Like, if you... buy this for your 7-year-old, then what? You're not going to IGN. How do you figure out what's going on?
Exactly. I mean, probably just anecdotally, you guys, because I know I got a bunch too. People were just tweeting me pictures of their new consoles that they couldn't play.
Exactly. Yeah,
and it totally struck me as I remember growing up getting consoles for Christmas, and that just being one of the best days of my life.
I mean, those
days defined me and eventually got me here. And I can't imagine like my mom being like, well, so there's a hacker group called the Lizard Gang, and for the lulz, they disabled your new toy. I'd be like, why?
Yeah.
Like, how does their power supersede Santa's?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, right. How does that work?
Harsh realities.
Exactly. So, I mean, it sucks. Like, I get trying to point out flaws in a company's infrastructure. That's the sort of David and Goliath thing that will always permeate. But to do it like... Christmas should be sacred, is what I'm trying to say.
It sucks too.
Do it any other day but Christmas.
Everybody had time off. Like, yeah. I'd been talking to Fran on Christmas Eve, and I was like, I really want to get back into Destiny. Fran's super obsessed with Destiny. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what level are you? I'm like, I'm 24 at the time. And he's like, all right, I'm going to make a new character, and I'll roll him, and in 8 hours, I'll be to where you are, and we can go. And I was like, awesome! And then, like, we got home that night, and everything was effed. Everything was destroyed. And it was off the rails till, like, Sunday night. And I was like, well, I don't have time right now. And Fran couldn't catch up in time.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Our friend, Cheesy Queso, that's also Steve from Oregon, but mm-hmm. Cheesy Queso on the PlayStation Network writes, and it says, hey guys, the PlayStation Network outages over the last couple of days have been pretty annoying, and I know how you guys feel about entitlement in gamers and society in general, which I wholeheartedly agree with. But since the PlayStation has made PlayStation Plus a requirement to play online games, are we not entitled to a more secure online service? I know this is a delicate subject and is no way comparable to the breach of 2011, but it was particularly annoying to be able to play online. It was particularly annoying not to be able to play online games on my holiday. Love to know your thoughts. Keep up the good show. Cheesy Queso.
Yeah, I mean, this is an unfortunate situation. I agree. Like, I don't understand. Like, that's what I was saying to people. Like, I don't understand why you do something like this. You know, like that's just weird to me to, like, want to be that disruptive for no reason. I mean, there's, like, righteous things that certainly, you know, hackers can do, I guess. But, like, I don't feel like going after, like, innocent people is, like, a righteous thing. Like, what, you know, I mean, not to get political, but like when things are leaked from bad things governments are doing, and like that's given out to the public, so they'd be like, look what your government's doing.
Yeah. Right.
And like that's I think somewhat righteous, you know, like that's a somewhat righteous thing to do, like whether or not it's right or wrong, you know, and certainly not legal. But, you know, like there are ways that, you know, people with that kind of knowledge can help, you know, and like and do good things. But it seems like it's always used to do terrible things to people that don't deserve to be punished because they didn't do anything wrong.
Reading between the lines of their message, I sort of gathered that they did it because they wanted jobs.
Really?
Like, it was sort of just like, hey, there's hackers in jail that can do better than this, and they're behind bars. And we've had examples in the last few years of hackers actually getting hired by major companies to be like, point out our flaws. Like, what did we do wrong?
Like the movie Catch Me If You Can.
That's right.
Check fraud.
Exactly. And that's sort of that's sort of a weird way to do it. And like again, I do kind of understand the like let's take down the giant network because we can thing. Like that's you know that's a David and Goliath type of thing. But I do think that like doing it in a way that affects everybody who is outside of that is problematic and selfish. Like I think making it so people can't play video games on Christmas is so. I don't know what Sony can do in a situation like this. If they want to, like, if they want to give, you know, sort of some incentive back to the people, like, if you actually broke down PlayStation Plus, is how much money a year if you don't get any 50 deal
bucks.
Anymore? 50 bucks a year, right? And if they did the math on.
That's, I don't know anymore.
And if it's down for 7 days of that year, then I guess they owe you, you know, what, $1.75 or $3, whatever the math is. I didn't go to math school.
I went to art school. God
I went to art school
it.
Where they don't, yeah, there's nothing like that. So I guess from there they can say, we're going to give you $3 back or $5 back, or here's a free PlayStation Plus game or here's an extra thing. Like,
50.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the last time the PlayStation Network went down, it was down for, what, like a month and a half or something like
month,
that.
Yeah.
And they gave us games. A choice between a couple of games.
Yeah.
And that was fine. And, you know, I wasn't particularly enthused by any of them because I'd played them already. But I was like, thank you. That's,
right.
That's better than
it's
nothing.
It's a nice move. Yeah, yeah. And that's where this is the weird one. Like, the response from both Xbox and PlayStation was to tweet, we're sorry you're having so much troubles. We're giving away copies of the game, retweet to win kind of thing. And I was like, that didn't seem right. But then again, in the same breath, I also feel for them, right? Like, it's not a hack where they went in and found, like, with the PlayStation, right, where there was, like, one digit that's always the same, so they were able to extrapolate and get in that way. This was, like, our servers are being overloaded by these people, and, like, sorry, like, there's nothing we can do, and I'm not at all tech-savvy to even understand what a DDoS attack is, let alone how to stop it. How do you up your bandwidth to accept in the request
well,
to not
yeah, that,
overflow?
The Lizard Gang actually... Every time I say that, I laugh.
I think there's a squad.
Lizard Squad? I'm sorry. There's a huge difference between a gang of lizards and a squad. they basically said that had they manned up bandwidth on each side, it would have been avoidable. Because what they basically did was just send like swarms and swarms and swarms of traffic towards a central hive and then overflowed it. And, what
it's
sucks
so
is
weird.
Like, it's so weird. But what sucks is that, like the people fixing it, like it's also Christmas for them too.
Yeah, I know, right?
And they're sitting there at dinner and they get this text and it's like, oh, the Lizard Squad again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know the. I don't know. It, to me, it's like, you know, as far as I understand, like, what these guys did, I think that real hackers and, like, security experts are, like, these guys, like, Krebs. I don't know if you guys read Krebs on security. It's, like, a site that comes up every once in a while. This guy. It's, like, a really interesting website by a guy who, like, deals with, like, very popular site, actually, that deals with just internet security and stuff like that. And he always, like, writes these commentaries or whatever. He's, like, these guys aren't hackers. Like, doing a DDoS is not hacking, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were tweeting at us over the holidays being like, why aren't you talking more about it and saying it's like, because I don't want to, why do you want to give them attention? Like, just go about your business. I know it sucks, like, that you can't play your PS4, but, like, just starve these guys of the oxygen that they want. And, like, if no one fed into it, just like many other things on the internet, you could just suffocate it and it would go away.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, like, that's just the fact of the matter. Now, I understand that, like, it's impossible to coordinate something like that, but I'm not going to contribute my own, you know, I'm not going to like give them any oxygen, extra oxygen by talking about it. And, like,
let alone 10 minutes on the
world's
number
PlayStation
one PlayStation.
Well, when it was happening, now it's over. I mean, now it's
the inbox demands that we talk about this. There was enough people upset
but
wanting to talk about it.
No, but not on Twitter and like all those kinds of things. Yeah, it sucks. Like, I couldn't play games either, and not that I there was nothing I really specifically wanted to even play this holiday season. Anyway,
DC Universe Online.
But and Vita worked just fine.
Not Resogun.
No, not Resogun anymore. But yeah, I think that, you know, it just sucks that these things happen. And like I said earlier, there's so many smart people out there that really understand computers and really understand networks and have a lot of intellect. And they can use their abilities to help companies that don't deserve. Like, the thing that's always weird to me is that, like, why do you want to, like, I understand why you want to do it, I guess, if you're, you know, you're mean-spirited and you're evil, basically. But, like, why would you want to hack a company and steal credit card information of just innocent people that are shopping there? Why do you want to knock a network down like this or interrupt people, like, disrupt people? Like, there are – you can use your abilities for good, you know, and
it's
the right thing and
it's
help.
It's the scene in The Dark Knight where Joker's just hanging out of the car and he's just, like, smiling and laughing like a dog on vacation, right? And there's, like, there's no logic or reason behind it. Like, he lights the money on fire. He doesn't care. It's just sort of like – it's just fun. I like fucking with shit. Like, there's no it's just like anarchy. Like,
so we did this to show we can do this.
Yeah, that's it. It's not like, oh man, this is we're going to gain so much from this. Like, even if they never get a dollar from it, it's just sort of being like, I'm part of a movement.
Everyone talked about them.
And yeah, everyone talked about me and my thing. Movement yeah. and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's just so. Like it's sociopathic behavior that you don't want to reward. Like it's find a post-mortem kind of like we're doing now. But like at the sure. time, like, I don't know. I understand the rage. Everyone's confused and stuff like that. But like just don't engage with it. Like they do the same things to the network over and over again. Now, the bigger confusion is like why Sony can't, you know, fix this problem. There are ways to stop DDoS attacks.
Sure.
And like why... Can't, I mean, it's apparently complicated. I'm not technical at all, but like I've read plenty about it since then.
And it was interesting that Xbox Live was up so much quicker.
Yeah, because their infrastructure is just better. I was thinking about it the other day. Like, the worst job in the industry has to be a PlayStation Network engineer.
Support, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Just because, like, you didn't make the network, and you have to somehow fix it and defend it against, you know, people that want to bring it down or whatever with clearly broken infrastructure that's clearly inferior to the competition. So,
yeah.
But nonetheless, I'm glad it's back up now, and you know, it gives you perspective a little bit on why these consoles are even connected to the internet, like need to connect to the internet.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I was actually thinking about that because you guys were kind of tweeting a lot about the Tetris game that you were having problems with, and I was sitting there going, my 1989 copy of Tetris for Game Boy still works.
Exactly.
Like it never. Games used to just work, and I sound like an old man when I say that, but that's weird to think that things used to just work without having to constantly identify with a network. And when the network's down, you can't play a game. Like that's insane to me. There should always be a sort of fail-safe that's just like, he just wants to play a video game today. Let him. It's on the disc. It's on his hard drive. Let him do it.
Yeah, all the PSN games that have the little lock insignia on there. I was like, God dang it.
Yeah, it's insane.
And the Tetris thing is infuriating specifically because... You know,
it's happened before.
Yeah, this exact problem has been suffered before from other people. Like you need to QA your games better. Like, it's inexcusable.
I don't know if we talked about this on the show last week, did we?
Tetris.
The problem if you're a FedEx driver and we're your only source of any information is that Tetris came to PlayStation Network. Colin and I love Tetris. We downloaded Tetris and it chugged, ran, crashed. It didn't work, and it's because we had, they think, 2,000 friends.
Yeah.
And so if the only way to play it without that happening for us is to play offline, and this whole Tetris's new thing is like, how are your friends doing? And here's this leaderboard.
Yeah, it's inexcusable. Like, it's if I made this game and I QA'd this game and I let this game get out, I'd be embarrassed by like the fact that this specific problem is holding the game back and that it's not fixed yet. That's the bigger embarrassment. It's okay, like it slipped through the cracks of Q&A. We didn't, for some reason, stack a friends list. Like, you know, we might have learned from other studios or whatever that this is a problem, but the game came out literally like 3 or 4 weeks ago, right? Like 3 weeks
the
ago.
Fact that, yeah, they the haven't fact figured that,
like,
it's not, out. Yeah,
like,
it is
a big problem. I went to play it last night, and I was like, oh, it's got to be fixed by now.
Yeah.
And no patch downloaded, and then I was like, all right. And then it started up, and it's like, it's still broken. I'm like, this is insane. It's Tetris. And not only that, and I understand it's not the game running that's, like, breaking it. It's, like, it's connectivity to PSN. But it's, like, it's not acceptable to be like, oh, just disconnect it from the internet. Like, I want to, like, post my leaderboard scores. Like, I don't want to play Rezogun offline. Newsflash, I don't have to.
Yeah.
Because it works.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a weird problem. Like, all these games are broken, and this fall has been like a joke almost.
I know.
Games. Like,
oh,
that's
my God.
I'm, like,
yeah,
so,
this fall has been totally
I'm, like, frankly,
up.
So unenthusiastic about, like, everything that's coming out right now because it's just like, these games are just broken.
Well, we're just getting constantly burned, and our audience is too. And it's getting, like, it's just actually very disheartening. And I forget, I might have talked about this on another show at IGN, but, you know, like, I've had Assassin's Creed Unity sitting in the plastic wrapping for like 2 months now. But every couple of days, I hear about a new patch coming out. And I'm like, I guess I'll try that game in 3 or 4 months when it's done.
Yeah, but it's
been sitting there, but I can't play it. And I'm like, I want to see what, you know, what Paris looks like. I want to see what their next-gen crowd engines look like and stuff like that. But I don't want to see any of the stuff that has plagued that game, so I have to sit and wait until it's ready. But that's their job. They should sit and wait until it's ready and then put it out. I shouldn't have a game that's constantly evolving sitting on my shelf. You know, I should be able to play something when it's ready. And to add an additional wrinkle to the Tetris thing that's interesting, that licensing agreement that I believe Ubisoft has with Tetris now has caused Nintendo to, starting I believe January 1st, remove all versions of Tetris off the eShop on 3DS and Wii U.
I didn't see that.
So the original Game Boy Tetris that I talked about still works. Yeah, it does on my 3DS for the next 48 hours. And now if I don't have it downloaded and saved on my 3DS forever, it's gone. Which means that pretty much the last Tetris you can play now is that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's so uncommon for you know these games that once worked to just be totally broken now. Like when you think about you know, Call of Duty had problems when it came out, but like matchmaking and all that was fine on previous Call of Duties. Yeah. Like, you know, Battlefield obviously was maybe the canary in the coal mine last year. That game was friggin' totally broken, and to a lot of people, that game is still totally broken.
Yeah.
I don't play Battlefield, but
that was sort of a like a preview of things to come for this year. Honestly.
And it's just it's
like God, they're working out the kinks for everybody.
It's next like, year, I agree with you. Like the only way, let's be frank, like the only way you stop this is to stop buying their games until mm-hmm. they fix them. You know, and they don't care about what you say; they care about what is in your wallet, and if you give it to them.
Yeah,
you know, that's it. That's what they care about. So. And it's not one or two publishers. It's a lot of publishers. It's a lot of. It's the first parties. It's everybody. They care about the money, and that makes perfect sense.
I feel like it's like a borderline like class action lawsuit territory where you're looking at people who are buying games in mass and not being able to play them. Like I can't think of anything else that works like that. Like if I buy a book and it's missing 10 chapters, or I order a pizza and they send me a dough and two pieces of pepperoni, they're like the sauce and the cheese are coming in 3 months. That's bull. That shouldn't work like that. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, and I think that I personally think that it makes the most sense to for these publishers to be like, we're just rushing these games out, and we need to be honest with ourselves that they're not ready.
Yeah.
That the ideal should be that a game works out of the box and never needs to be patched.
Yeah.
And that, like, the 1.01 patch that is released for every game should be, like, the little things that, like...
Stability and
stability
balance
and fix a typo somewhere or something, but, like, not... Like not an essential thing. It's like when It's like when Killzone came out, Killzone wouldn't even fit on a 4 gig card because like you could download it,
yeah.
But then you couldn't download the patch and the game wouldn't work. Like there's all these weird things. Like when like Borderlands or other games, like these have massive patches that are as big as the game. You know, the game's already 40 gigabytes on PS4. Like, how much more data do you need? Like, the game should just be fixed and refined before it's released.
I agree. And it's also because they sort of selfishly assume the responsibility of the user to sort of shoulder all of that bandwidth, too. Like, there are people that, you know, we have unlimited data plans. We're in San Francisco. Ooh, we're so great. But there are people who live in places where they're just like, hey, caps. I have, like, 3 gigs a month, two gigs a month. Like, and you give them an 8 gig download day one, and it's like... That's a problem. Like someone's paying over usage charge on that. Like that shouldn't ever happen. Things should be ready and then they should be put out. And if they're not ready, they should be delayed. And if that means that some dude at some company gets fired because they didn't meet their you know quota for the year, I don't care.
Yeah,
that's not my problem.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to play video games.
And at the end of the day, I think that you know a lot of this is just another reason why I love indie games and why I love smaller games and smaller studios because their games work.
Yep.
You know what game didn't have a problem? Shovel Knight.
Yep.
That game didn't have any problems at all. It was fine.
Yep.
It worked just fine. You know what game had a massive problem when it came out? Dead Nation. Oh my God. Don't get me started on Dead Nation, man. With the fact that problem just reared its head again, like out of nowhere.
My problem is things like Tetris that worked fine 20 years ago but doesn't work now, or Master Chief Collection which worked 10 years ago but doesn't work now, like. Just don't put it out. If it's not ready, don't put it out.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, so that's what I'm saying when it gets back to, oh, just disconnect it from the internet. It's like, no, just fix your game.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's what you need to do now. Because now I'm like actually starting to get angry about it. Because like I typically give them I try to give devs the benefit of the doubt because we really don't understand what it's like to crunch. And we really don't understand like what it's like in the trenches. And making games is hard. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. It's very hard work. But... The bigger the games get, the more ambitious the games get, and the more connected the consoles get, the more broken the games become. And that's not a coincidence. So fix the games. And if they're not ready, then don't release them.
Then don't release them.
And this we've talked about this on the podcast in the past, but this is why I have such a great appreciation for Nintendo.
Yeah.
Because their games work. You know? Like, Wii U was the first console they ever had where you could start, home console, where you can actually patch things. Because the Wii was so... The games released on Wii, like Galaxy, worked. You know, and they didn't need to patch it. And when a game had a catastrophic breaking, like Metroid Other M, we talked about this podcast,
yep.
They actually took your SD cards and gave you new saves.
Yep. Which is insane. But it worked. It's what they had to do.
And I don't know. It's just I'm so disturbed by the quality control in it, and it's made me so unenthusiastic about a lot of these new releases and much more enthusiastic about a lot of the smaller games coming out because I can rely on them. I can rely on those smaller games, and I can rely on those smaller studios, and we can't rely on big publishers right now to, you know, whether it's Little Big Planet 3, which is broken for a lot of people, or was, and people tweeted me today saying, nope, the game's still broken.
Yep.
And our friend Eric is saying the game's totally botched. You know, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare had its problems. Assassin's Creed had its problems. Far Cry had its problems.
It's endless. Yeah, you don't have to start down this
list. But it's counterintuitive to their efforts to garner as many sales as possible and defeat the used games market, right? Because why would I be there day one if you're not ready for me day one? And I'm not ready for you. Like, if your product is not finished day one, I'm not buying it day one. I'll buy it 2 months later. And if I go buy it 2 months later, I'm going to look online to see the best deal I can get. And if that's a used copy at GameStop, then yeah, why not just do that? So no, you won't get my $60 on day one. You'll get it 2 months later, but it won't even be – you won't even see that money. You know, a used game seller will. So – they're screwing themselves over in the long run, and I really feel like they're hurting. Like,
that. But are they? I mean, that's my thing. Like, we say they're screwing themselves over, vote with your wallet, and yada yada yada. But are people really going to do that? Like, when the next Call of Duty comes out, are people really going to step back and say, "I'm going to wait and see what happens"?
I mean, I used to be with you on that one, but yeah. I do feel that things like these ripples do fill the pond.
They do
eventually matter.
Yeah.
And I look at the way Microsoft handled things leading up to the Xbox One, just sort of like. And making these announcements that were, anti-consumer, there being revolts about it, and then they're still sort of battling that notion today. I do feel that like there was a couple of years where like the Ubisoft logo really meant something, and it was after a couple years after the EA logo meant something, and then the EA logo just sort of became synonymous with like ripping people off and microtransactions, and the Ubisoft logo started to become synonymous with games that don't work on release day or developers that are misleading and stuff like that. And that's unfortunate because thousands of people work on these games, and
sure,
they are beautiful works of art once they're up and running. I mean, Ubisoft has worked, they made Far Cry 4, which is one of my favorite games of the year. Assassin's Creed looks beautiful.
Valiant
aside
Hearts.
From everything. Valiant Hearts. Like, they make Rayman, a whole
Child
bunch of other
Light.
Games. Yeah, so many good games. You know, they really are talented people. But that logo is going to start being synonymous with doubt and negativity.
Half-cooked, yeah.
So,
yeah, it is ironic how quickly the optics have turned on Ubisoft specifically. Because
yeah.
I remember even saying on this podcast earlier this year, and certainly in years past, like, I'm really interested in what these guys are doing. These guys are doing really good work, and
they're like, oh, are we? Watch
yeah,
this,
yeah.
Moriarty.
And, yep. And I'm like, these guys are really becoming the top-tier premier publisher that you can really rely on to release good games. And to their credit, they did fund Child of Light, and to their credit, they did fund Valiant Hearts. And those games did work because they're not overly connected, and they're not overly connected with ambition. But then we get to all, you know, Watch Dogs, and which I played for 2 hours. I know you really love that game. Mm-hmm. I played it for 2 hours. I was like, I don't want to play this. And then we get to Far Cry 4, which is a great game, but then Assassin's Creed's broken, and Tetris has problems. Just all this weird stuff. And then with Sony, who you can always, I think, always rely on for their first-party games, like Drive Club was a disaster. Like a disaster. I've never seen anything like that, you know, like released in the AAA space
oh,
before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then Little Big Planet was like long in development and just didn't work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is going on? Like, it's just so interesting to me. And it makes me feel like maybe my position has evolved, or I was wrong, or maybe things have just changed.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I never really had a problem with used games per se. You got to do what you got to do with your own money. But I was like, if you want to reward the publishers and you want to reward the developers, you got to buy that game new, because there's just no revenue stream after the game leaves the shelf
right.
for them, except for DLC, obviously.
And I like doing that. You
right,
know?
Exactly. But now I agree with you. It's like, why would you give these guys your money? You know? Like why would you do that?
Well, yeah, especially on the first day, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have to take a wait-and-see approach to
right.
all these things. And you could trust – you used to be able to really trust them. And now they have to regain that trust. But that's the thing, is that they have to regain the trust. You don't just
so then back to my point of, like, does it really matter, right? Like, I remember when DC Universe Online launched and being there day one and then tweeting about the fact the servers were overloaded, this wasn't happening. Everybody's like, welcome to an MMO launch. And Diablo
yeah.
came out, welcome to an MMO – or, you know, not, you know what I mean, online. People who are in that scape, the PC gamer who's ahead of the curve on most things, right?
Sure.
That's just how it is. And that's just like the joke, right? That's just the line. So isn't that just going to be the line for the next games that come out?
Well,
next year's Assassin's Creed, next year's...
I mean yes
Evolve,
and no, right?
When Evolve comes out in a couple months, is it like day one, if it's all effed up, we're going to be like, welcome to 2015.
Well, so I would sort of hope that Evolve works on a fundamental level on day one. I understand things like DC Universe Online and Minecraft, which are, very, very different games now than they were when they first started.
Right.
Like, these are evolving worlds. And I do understand that, like, at some point you have to ship the game and put it out and let people start populating that world and then building it from there. That's sort of acceptable, you know? And I say that sort of with, like, a wink and a nod, because I don't feel like we need to – like, games do need to – come out at some point. And I do feel
you
like,
understand the technical limitations of testing an environment.
100%. Yeah, 100%. But I do feel like something like, you know, your Far Cry's and your Assassin's Creed's should absolutely work on a fundamental level on day one, and they should be able to be completed from start to finish. Like, there shouldn't be entire chunks of the world missing, or there shouldn't be 9 gigabyte day one patches. Like, I feel like all of that needs to be baked in the disk. That sounds like somebody is flying in hot and landing the plane like on one wheel, on a wing on fire. Like,
yeah.
And that doesn't really exude confidence to me in purchasing a product. I do understand like the ever evolving breathing worlds of games like Minecraft and everything else,
because
they are very different games than when they started. But something like an Assassin's Creed or a Master Chief Collection or Tetris should work on day one.
Yeah, I
got a filthy mouth today, Altano. These are all you, pretty much.
Oh, really?
I think Colin's got one in there.
Okay, God, I'm so sorry.
I think that, yeah, it makes me long and pine for a simpler time when games really worked and you didn't have to worry about it. And we didn't have to talk about these things. We could have confidence in really talented, you know, developers and publishers to deliver their games or whatever. And I'm not even really sure it's the devs. You know, I actually think that they're the ones being funded, and so they're the ones that need to release the game at a certain time, and their games are just not ready.
Yeah.
Or they're not being tested properly. That's just weird, man.
See,
it's
and
just
that's what I think it comes back to that in terms of testing properly. And how, like, I don't think that there's a checklist that includes full friends list. I don't think Sony has a way to populate your dev kit to its full potential than to have it test on a retail server and see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like when it happened with Tetris and it was all screwed up. Colin and I did a Let's Play earlier today. Here's how it doesn't run. Later in the afternoon, I did, hey, Ubisoft's come by, showed me unplug it. That's not a solution, but it is. And I talked about how I felt for them, right? Because the comments, of course, were like, I can't believe these developers wouldn't know what to do. The Ubisoft's made how many PlayStation games? It's like, well, Ubisoft has, but this is a different developer who isn't out there doing. They weren't on Assassin's Creed. They don't know this. But now there's the difference of it's 2 weeks later or whatever, and there's still no fix. That's when I think it's more on them to have figured this out. But on the backside of it, before it comes out, the fact that Xbox ran fine and Steam ran fine or whatever, they didn't have these problems is the fact that PlayStation is a different beast. And PlayStation, are they communicating that to third parties? Are they saying, like, here's an issue not a lot of people, but 0.111% of people run into, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, there's a failure on many levels, you know? Yeah. Like, the fact is that, like, yeah, I can. We were talking about, like, you know, forgiving the online environments evolving and things not working. I guess so, but games do come out that are massively multiplayer that work. So, like, it's not like this is a. There's got to be a question of competence at some point, you know? Like, some things work and some things don't. It's not like it's totally congruent everywhere.
Right,
like,
right.
Every online game is broken. No, that's not the way the games come out, right? Like, forgive me if I'm wrong, but didn't Destiny work fine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Destiny was getting slammed, like, way more than Drive Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you have to ask yourself, like, you know, what is going on? Like, why isn't this working? You know, it's not this congruent problem that, like, everyone is just
there were issues, but you were able to get online and play.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
And you iron those kinks out, but Destiny worked. Like, you could play it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember because everyone was playing it.
Yep.
You know? And to me, it's just, I don't know. I've just had a lot of time to think about it because I've just not been playing, you know, a lot of AAA games. I'm working my way through Call of Duty Advanced Warfare's campaign, which is weird. I don't like it that much.
Really?
And I'm a big Call of Duty fan.
But you love Kevin Spacey.
I do love Kevin Spacey. It's just weird. There's too many. As a tangent on Advanced Warfare, did you guys play this game at all?
I haven't done it yet. No.
There's way too much crap in that campaign. Like, I just want to shoot things. See,
You don't play much.
Yeah, the essence of Call of Duty is its awesome shooting mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
No one does it better than Call of Duty at all, in my opinion. You know, like, I don't know why everyone doesn't just replicate everything they do in terms of shooting mechanics. But there's, like, all these times when you're not shooting, I'm like, there are multiple parts of the game that I just failed over and over again. I'm like, I don't even know what you want me to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like there's one part where you are hanging off the side of a truck on a highway, and you have a pistol with 6 bullets in it, and you're just driving around, and there's these two guys on the truck, and you have to shoot them both. And I'm like, it's easy in premise, and you do it eventually, but, like, you just fail, like, over and over again. You're like, you can't aim. Like, why? This isn't fun. This is stupid.
That.
Why can't this just happen automatically? Then they have all these QuickTime events with the icons that are just white and little, and you don't even know. Like, you don't even see them half the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you just fail, and I'm like, I don't even know.
What happened? To do something. What's that about? Yeah.
There's one part where you have to identify a guy in a crowd. Did you do this part where you have to identify? And I failed that literally 20 times until I was like, I don't know.
Was it GTA 5 that let you just skip missions after you failed them a few times? There's some game in the last few years that I really love for letting me do
that. No, I know
what
you're talking about. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I forget what it was, but I was just like, this is great. Let me do this in every game because I can't deal with it. Yeah, Call of Duty games, they're just like, They're some of the busiest looking games I've ever seen. Like, I feel like they get 2,000 people to just, they're like, so today you're rendering 95 different trash cans, and you're going to make a toilet seat, and you're going to do 60 newspapers, and everywhere you go, there's just objects, and they're just busy as hell. And then some guy comes in, and you shoot him, and it's just like, after, it actually gets to me after a while, because I'm like, these are just really, like, just noisy, busy worlds, and I'm just killing everything in them, and then, like, a guy loses half a body part, and then the credits roll, like, and it's enough.
It's weird, because, like, I really enjoy – I can't think of the last Call of Duty campaign I didn't like. You know, like, I really liked Ghost's campaign a lot. I like Black Ops campaign. World at War was a really good campaign, but that game was hard as hell on Veteran. I couldn't beat it on Veteran. Like, that was one of the few games I've ever encountered where I'm like, I can't play this game. Like, it's impossible, you know? And to the point where in World at War, like, the best technique a lot of people were using was just to run.
Yep.
To, like just run. Like, to get to the next checkpoint over and over again, and, like, that game was impossible. But – with this particular game, I was disappointed. I was really excited about it. It was actually one of my most exciting games. It's just like an action movie you play for 5 hours.
Right.
And I like that. I like. And I hate that people just hate on Call of Duty to hate it. Like, I don't play online at all on Call of Duty, but I just like the campaigns. And I was like, there's just so much stuff in this that doesn't belong there. And you're right with the like now that they're really tracking your statistics. And this is really the first Call of Duty game where you're like kind of leveling up.
Yeah.
I like look at my thing and I'm like, I'm in the 10th or 11th mission of the game, and it's like I've killed like 810 people.
Yeah, it's insane.
I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like insane. A mass murderer.
Yeah.
You know, and how many, and I got 120 of them with headshots.
Yeah.
And I also found the random laptops that are strewn around for Intel or whatever, and it's like, I don't know, the game's really disjointed to me. I'm super, I don't want to say super disappointed because I think it's good mechanically. It's just, I'm just like, I don't know what this game is. And, that was disappointing to me. Far Cry 4 was really good, as you said, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I still have to play The Evil Within and a few of these other games. But again, I'm so disenchanted right now that I really want to retreat to the smaller games in the indie space, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm really eager and anxious to play some of these tinier games that are on the precipice, like Axiom Verge. You know, these games I'm like way more excited about than AAA stuff, you know. And it makes me worried with all these connectivity issues and you know, this, that, and the other thing. Like, what are some of the big AAA games that we're excited about coming up? That
The Order,
like the Order, Uncharted,
Bloodborne.
Whatever, that might, no, but that might also be fundamentally broken.
Bloodborne, I'm serious about. There's online connectivity of that. So
yeah, we don't know what the Order's online connectivity is at all. My sense is that the Order is totally single player.
Okay.
I suspect. I bet you there's no multiplayer in it at all.
They'll probably still have to ping a server to authenticate whatever.
So I don't know, man. Like, I hope that these publishers are becoming self-aware enough and really like listening to the people to be like, we have to be better than this because yeah, it's going to affect our bottom line, but we also owe the gamers that are loyal to us much better than this. Some people pay some of these companies like Sony hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really feeling people out there that are disappointed that their games aren't working. I really feel for them.
You talk about going to the indies, giving them your money. You like the indies, like to support indies.
Hell yeah, dude.
Jake sees a terrifying future. He writes in and says, "Hello, Greg, Colin, and Marty." This is what.
Hey,
Marty,
I'm Marty's. I have sinus issues and a beard.
I don't know why I gave him like a beyond.
You sound like a Muppet.
I know.
The way the industry has been going for the past few years, with AAA developers becoming the minority while indies rise up in seemingly no middle tier, do you guys think that we've almost come full circle to where the industry first started with smaller devs who will eventually grow into bigger studios? Do you think this will play out again? Jake. He's saying, well, smaller, the people who were indies, who then became your Activisions when they started up, and people are like, oh, what a cool idea, then become Activision. They become evil. New indies grow up. Will we soon see Devolver Digital or whatever turn into horrible Switchblade monkeys, be horrible monkeys. People?
Maybe. I mean, Activision's story is interesting. That's the company I thought of, too. I mean, Activision was a split from Atari.
Yeah.
And they were largely leaving because they weren't getting credit for their games that they were making. They were basically just like, you know, anonymous people that were making games. And they believed that if you put a face on the box and made people care about, you know, David Crane or something like that, you know, that would matter. David Crane, of course, is the man because of A Boy in His Blob, specifically.
Well, mainly because of Ghostbusters, but yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know, to me, I think that regardless of the way the indie space evolves, and whether, like, you find a conglomeration of indies that then form a publisher that then, you know, do their thing or whatever, that's entirely possible. But I think it can only be positive because I'd rather developers be born out of that space of struggle and smallness and innovation, that they had to do something different to get their games noticed, as opposed to the next shooter, the next third person, you know, action game, the next Western RPG, and those games are totally fine, and that's great. I mean, we all want to play those games, but that space is where everything's exciting. Everything exciting is coming from. And like I said at PSX, when you walked in PSX, everything to the right was indie, and everything to the left was AAA. And what was going on the right was way more exciting than what was going on the left. Like, not even close.
You're breaking David Jaffe's heart.
And there was definitely exceptions. I mean, I think Drawn to Death, we said during the thing, was a great innovation. A totally brilliant idea. Whether or not it pans out, I have no idea. You played it. I didn't.
It was a lot of fun.
And
it also looks more like an indie game than any AAA shooter out there right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the whole thing, right? The whole Bartlett Detective Agency is, what is that? You know, I mean, that's indie to an extent, right?
Like, yeah, I guess some of San Diego is like supporting them or whatever, but... You know, and there were, of course, there were, you know, Super Stardust is over there, and although they really probably should have been on the other side because Housemarque is an indie studio, but there was
gentrifying PlayStation.
There was games on the left side that were fun and exciting, but there was a lot over there where I was like, ugh, like whatever. Like on the right were all these new ideas, playing soccer with RC cars, you know, in Rocket League. Not that's the second game that did that, however. You know, a Metroidvania game where you manipulate the environment with glitches, like Axiom Verge.
What's the game I'm thinking of? I kept telling you about, and I did the conversation with you about it, with the like Grecian art or whatever.
Not Pantheon. Apotheon? No, is that what that was? I know what you're talking about. It's a difficult name.
It was a cool game.
No, I know what you're talking about. They were at E3 too. I guess what I'm saying is just that. I was going row to row with all those indie devs, you know, and I was just stoked about what they were doing, you know, and I was like, these are the games I want to play. There's a game that looks like Phantasy Star here. There's a game that looks like Azur Dreams over there. There's a new Metroidvania. There's a indie, you know, side scrolling shooter there. You know, I'm like, this is good stuff. You know, when I think about my experience in 2013 and 2014, a lot of those games were the ones that resonated with me most. Mercenary Kings and Shovel Knight. Even Child of Light, which came from a big publisher, but was made by a small team. I feel like that's where the innovation's coming from. So I don't think that that's a dark future. I think that these studios becoming more powerful is exciting to me. Now, the scary thing is whether they turn into what we don't like.
Right.
You know, but I don't think that that happens.
So my sort of mantra on indie games, and the reason I love them so much, is because I feel like indie games are kind of birthed from two sides, right? And one is freedom. And the other is limitation. And the freedom is what allows them to go,
Apotheon.
We're going to make a game about a guy with a shovel, and he's going to fight people. And no one goes, no.
Yeah.
That's great. But then they go, okay, here's our limit. That's our freedom, right? To pitch any idea and make it happen. Here's a limitation. Money, assets, resources, time, whatever that is. And all of those things are what caused some of the best innovations in video game history and the history of any medium, really, is that people were able to go, we have to work around the constraints of this tiny budget and this tiny art team, and we have to push our creativity past anywhere it would be. Whereas on Call of Duty, they just go, you know, render 10,000 things, put it all in the game, pay for everything, get it all done. On Shovel Knight, they're probably like, well, this is all we can work with. This is all we have. This is our palette. This is our structure. This is our team. This is what we have to do. So if they get bigger and bigger, that's okay. Because I think that, like you said, if they're still rooted in the freedom of being able to do any idea they want to make without anybody stopping them, then that's nothing but a good thing. And the good thing about indies is that unlike AAA devs, there will always be indies. AAA devs will come and go. That we've seen so many burn out and get huge and then die. But there will always be a small group of people making a small game. And that's awesome. You know, that will never go away. So the small guys might elevate to medium and to the top and might blow up and fade away, but there will always be 10,000 more kids in high school and in college and old age making making the games they want to make with the limited budgets they have and coming up with some of the coolest ideas ever seen in our industry. So it's pretty awesome.
Art. Yeah. It's art. Anyone can be an artist.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that, you know, I always try to shake and rattle people out of, like, this idea that, you know, I understand why everyone wants AAA games, and I understand, like, why we need them. I mean, we would like to play them. I'm excited about a lot of AAA games that are coming next year. I'm really excited to play The Order. I'm really excited about Uncharted. I'm, you know, like, there are plenty of games coming out next year where I'm like, I'm really going to delve into this $60 experience.
Yeah.
But you really don't need them to justify your purchase of a console or a PC. Like, the games that are going to fill the cracks right now between the AAA games are the games that are eventually going to overflow and be the meat, you know, on the plate, and not the vegetables and the potatoes. Or
don't
whatever.
Be stealing my goddamn things.
Yeah, you have a lot of analogies lately.
That's one of my best. That's me.
But, you know, so to me, like, I'm this future that some people dread is the future I'm, like, totally excited about.
Me
because
too.
you know, I think that we have to stop looking at games as these things that come in boxes and on a disc that put you in first-person shooter mode and let you kill things.
Run around realistic, lush environments.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's great once in a while. I don't need that with every game, you know?
I think people justify that attitude, which I'm totally with you on that, because I've been hearing the word indie thrown around as a negative for years now, and it's so counterproductive to me.
More like Indie Station.
Yeah, and it's so dumb. And I think I sort of understand it, because I think people, they spend $400 or $500 on this beast of a machine, and they want this like centerpiece to show off. They want people to come in and go, look at the way these leaves are rendered. Look at what my machine can do, and not look at the 9 pixels on this guy's shovel. You know, like that's a harder sell. But to me, it's sort of like being like, I only listen to the most highest produced music in the world. Like, it's got to be in a major label, and it's got to be produced by the Neptunes and Timbaland. It's got to be featuring like 17 artists I can't name because I'm old.
JT.
But I don't listen to any, like, I don't, if some guy down the street was like, I made this album, it took me 3 years, and I made it myself, and it's amazing. I don't listen to that. I only listen to stuff on Sony and BMG and Warner Brothers and stuff. And that's sorry.
It's fine. I wasn't reprimanding you to stop you.
No, it's just now that I see it all written down, the amount of times it's like I really do have a problem.
You know? No, I mean you and I curse, I think, equally. I just have learned since we were told to stop cursing on this podcast.
Oh, me too, and I've gotten better, and then I went away for a week and a half and I came back and I'm like, hey,
I'm back from Jersey,
got
everybody.
The guns.
How you fucking motherfuckers doing? Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's funny how this has gone into this tangent about just, I guess, the state of the industry itself and what gets me excited and what gets me out of bed about games in the morning, and like what doesn't get me out of bed in the morning with games. And right now, I just with what I'm seeing and what's going on with games, like, I'm just not excited about what's going on in that space. I'm excited about everything on the right side of PSX.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like those are the guys. Those are got crazy talent. You're gonna see that some of these games are going to be a lot of fun, and they might not make your PS4 overheat, and they might run fine on Vita, or a PS3. Maybe some of them, Shovel Knight would run fine on a PS1. The fact is
Shovel Knight practically would run fine on an NES, aside from a few tweaks.
Yeah, they would need to do something still, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. One of the great games of all time to me is still, you know, the top-down Legend of Zelda from 87, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, that game runs on nothing. That game, that game is nothing compared to Ocarina of Time in terms of looks, but I think it's a better game.
Yeah, I agree.
And we have to look at things in more of the function of if they're fun and do you enjoy playing them. And sometimes you need that story and that art. Like, you get it in BioShock or The Last of Us, where it's like, this is exactly what you need to make this game work, is beautiful art and ambience and music and environment and atmosphere and all that. But not every time. And I think that people have to understand that the more you get that, the less special it's going to become. Yeah, Uncharted 4, we're going to end up waiting 4 years for that game.
Yeah.
Right?
And you're going to beat it in a weekend.
You're going to beat it in a weekend, and it's going to be awesome. But what if you got an Uncharted every year? You know, like, would you care anymore? I wouldn't.
No, not at all.
Like, the fact that we're waiting for it, we don't even know anything about it, and we've seen it for the first time, and it looks beautiful. I'm excited about that. I'm excited to spend time with that game. But I only need that a few times a year.
This is what you talked about with Telltale.
Exactly. This is what we talked about. You know, like, Telltale's losing its luster.
For you.
Already.
Not
for
to
me.
Everybody.
Because they're just doing too much. What does it mean now to be a Telltale game?
See, that's the thing. DJ writes into beyond@ign.com just like you can and says, hey, Greg, Colin, and probably not Marty. Beyond.
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 Your discussion on Telltale was interesting, and I want to add my 2 cents. I'm not so concerned about them being overexposed as I am with them being overextended. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping with all the plates they have spinning, they can continue to maintain the quality in all of the series they have going. Despite this concern, I would probably gladly hand over my firstborn, and so would my wife, if they did a Doctor Who season with the 10th Doctor and somehow were able to get David Tennant to do the voice acting. Keep on podcasting, Beyond.
It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think quality with Telltale games is a relative term in the sense that, in my experience, the story and the writing and the choices, the characters are
superb.
Great. Just like really almost unrivaled.
Yeah.
The technical aspects of the game.
And that's what we were saying. Like, I started playing The Walking Dead Season 1 on Vita when I was going to Tokyo 2 times ago, and the game just didn't run well at all. And I was like,
it's a slideshow at times. Exactly. I did the same exact thing.
It was like that on PS3 too, which is the other side.
Well, it's way worse on
on
Vita.
I know.
Yeah. But the point is that if they say, you know, I'm glad people are enjoying these games, more power to you. And if people want to keep buying them and they want to keep making them, great. But you have to wonder and reflect on the fact that maybe if they stop taking some of these projects, they can fix their engine. You know, and then jump back in and give you something like to me. I've not played anything but The Walking Dead from them, except for, you know, Back to the Future.
You didn't do season 2 yet either.
No, right? No. Right. And that's, I should do that. Maybe I'll do that today. And I look at it, so I'm like, I'm not like a huge fan of what they've been doing to the point where I need to buy everything they're doing, because I'm waiting kind of for these seasons to finish and kind of get into them. And like, I want to play Game of Thrones for sure. I don't think I want to play Borderlands, but
it's funny.
You know, to me, I look at it and I'm like, wouldn't it have been more exciting if, in my opinion, if they were like, we did The Walking Dead and we did season 2 and maybe we did The Wolf Among Us or whatever. Now we just disappear for a while and we release the season 3 of The Walking Dead and it's a totally different engine and it's beautiful and it runs perfectly. Mm-hmm. And that would enhance the experience, mm-hmm. you know? Because for as immersive as those games are, there are times on a technical level where you are removed from the experience.
100%.
I remember there was a point where the game stopped working for me, like in some way. I don't remember the exact details. When I was playing season 1, when the kids are like with their teacher in the woods, or whatever, and they're spoilers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Walking Dead season 1 spoilers. They're walking in the woods with their teacher when something gets caught in a trap or something like that.
The gym gets caught.
I wanted to get him out, but I could, like, something was happening where the game like wasn't responding right. Yeah. Right. And so it changed the story. But I didn't. That's not the story I wanted.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? I want the story to change when I make a mistake.
I've talked about this in the show before, but I had the same thing with season 2 playing it on Vita coming back from Japan. Same exact thing. I was on the same flight as you. And I marathoned through. I did the same thing as you. I kind of wait. Or maybe I'll play the first episode, and then I'll wait until the whole season's done, and I'll play all 5 straight through. But there was a character who pulled out a gun, and the game skipped 10 seconds and then the character was dead, and I don't know how that happened. I'll never know how that happened, and that is forever ingrained in my game forever. And it felt like watching a made for TV movie where it was just like an important part was just cut out. It was like yippee-ki-yay mother father, and then, you know, it just then the credits roll, and that sucks. Like, I don't know if they lost a bet and they have to use the same engine for 10 years or something like that, but I'm with you. I'd much rather see them go, hey, we're going to spend 6 months to develop an entirely new... Because I don't understand, again, I don't make video games, so I don't get this, but how taxing is what they're doing at any given moment? Like, there aren't 10,000 characters on screen. I'm not running around like a lush...
The problem is optimization,
yeah,
right?
Because
it's the fact that it, for the most part, runs fine on PC, except when it eats your save and deletes your data. And then it's like the law of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
You have to get it out to all these different platforms, and because they're on everything.
It's on everything.
From iPhones to, you know, the highest-end PC, yep. That game is working on. And so then I think it's as we get into it. From what I've heard, the PlayStation 4 version of both Season 1 and Season 2 runs great because that's finally comparable to a PC, right?
Yep.
Those are like night and day, talk to each other, and it's okay.
Got it.
Sure, but it's at the end of the day, like, that makes sense, but it's also a choice to put it on those platforms.
100%. I'm not at all justifying the fact that I'm always... This is the thing. We always talk about, you know, you always say, like, you know, if it wasn't for Journey, you would have been probably pushing for Walking Dead Season 1 to be your Game of the Year. Mm-hmm. And I reviewed all the Walking Dead games, loved all the Walking Dead games, and in Game of the Year meeting, stood up, and I'm like, don't vote for this game.
Yeah.
Like, this can't be what we say the Game of the Year was. Is it the story of the year? Sure. Characters, emotions, yeah. Yep. But, like, I always go back to, like, in Episode 5, Season 1, there's a part where Lee's climbing up a ladder, and it was just like, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
It's insane.
Like, 5 episodes into this thing that's now, you know, all eyes are on it, and we can't make this run well. It's like, well, come on.
It's a shame.
You know what I mean? Item 2 of the Roper Report.
Yeah, well,
wow. We're going in hard today.
We'll blaze through these. None of these are
really
super
simple. Well, again, there's just not that much stuff to talk about during Christmas breaks.
Due to the network outage, Sony has announced that it will extend the holiday flash sale it announced and unleashed before Christmas. Originally announced to run through the 29th, the sale will now run through year's end and include discounts on Dragon Age Inquisition, Destiny, Call of Duty, Advanced Warfare, The Evil Within, and much, much more. Discounted games are available for PS4, PS3, and Vita. I was looking at the list of games. There are a lot of good games on there, or a lot of games that I think people would be interested in buying. So this is, you know... to our friends out there who might looking to save a few bucks or get a game or two, this might be a list you want to look at, but you only have till the end of the year. So I hope you're listening to this Tuesday or Wednesday.
You better be listening to it soon.
Because I was surprised. I follow, we obviously follow PlayStation closely, and I look at the flash sales every time they do one. Some of them are good, and some of them are just not interesting to me. This is maybe the best one in terms of these are new games, not just like a theme.
Sure.
Number three, this was interesting. Sony Online Entertainment's PlanetSide 2 was announced for PS4 ages ago, and now it's finally coming to the console, at least in beta form. The beta is slotted to go live either the week of January 13th or the week of January 20th. SOE will have more to announce about the beta the week of the 5th, and there's a little other information available for it, including how long they're planning to run it, and if this means PlanetSide 2's launch on PS4 is somewhat imminent.
It's so depressing when they're that big of a gap. PlanetSide 2's been out on PC forever, and they're about to launch H1Z1 on PC, and it's like, I'd love to play that on PS4. Like, how long would I have to wait for that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, one hand's not talking to the other one over there. Especially with H1Z1. Like, you think that they would do that concurrently on PS4 and PC and make them talk to each other.
Yeah.
Nope.
I don't know.
We're not developers. We don't know.
Nope. I'm just a guy with a microphone.
Yep.
Number four.
You don't even own that microphone.
No, I don't. I don't even own anything I have on clothes on me right now. Number four. Due to the PSN outage, both Bungie and Rockstar have announced that special holiday-related activities in Destiny and Grand Theft Auto V, respectively, have been extended. I'm not going to bog it down because depending on when you're listening to this, it might not be relevant to you, but go to IGN for more information on that if you're looking for more nerdy goods in either of those games. And number five, just a quick, a quick shout out to our guys at Drinkbox. Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition is getting 4-player co-op early in 2015 on PS4. The patch facilitating 4-player co-op will be rolled out in the coming weeks and will be available free of charge. That game is excellent.
Interesting. 4-player co-op?
Yeah.
Through the main campaign?
I guess so.
How the hell does that work?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Wow.
I still think Guacamelee is one of those really, truly special games.
Yeah.
If you haven't played that game for some reason, you got to go play that game. It's too good. It's too good. And I hope that they get to do a sequel one day. We saw them at PSX. It was great to see them at PSX.
Yeah, good guys. Good fun.
Excellent guys. We flew to Toronto. We thought, because we had a flight to Toronto to go see Frank, our friend Frank.
What a Frank.
There was the three of us.
Unicornus.
And we
don't call him that.
He gets so mad.
He does get so mad.
Unicronus. Everybody knows Frank.
And Drinkbox is also located in Ontario. So I emailed with them the weeks before. And I'm like, are you guys leaving PSX the Sunday night going back to Canada, and they're like and I'm like, and it was like the same time, and I'm like, we must be on the same flight. It ended up being we were not on the same flight.
We didn't know until we got to the airport. We'd gone in separate cabs. We're like, we'll see you at the airport.
We had dinner with them, and then we were like, all right, we'll go to the airport. We just never saw
them. They emailed us on Monday like, did you guys make it? Are you okay?
Really?
Yeah. Brian,
hi.
All those games sound cool, but I want to know what came to stores now. So where do I go?
The Andrew Goldfarb Memorial official list of game releases on IGN.com and Amazon Prime. Something like that. How did I do?
I have to look because I was looking the other day. Usually the drop is on Sundays.
But Clements is slacking as usual. No pride in his work.
I don't think there was a drop because I don't think there are any games coming out this week.
No, that makes sense.
Which would make perfect sense. So
nothing. There's nothing.
Possibly
on the list.
Nothing coming out. Possibly nothing.
Check the PlayStation Network. You'll know if there's something.
Play some old stuff.
Yeah.
Play some of that good old stuff.
Call your moms.
Yeah. Call your parents.
Say hello.
Final question of the week sent to beyond@ign.com. Just like you should send all your final questions of the week. Fiat writes in and says, "Hey Greg, Colin, and I presume Marty's still away for the holidays. Whoever's in the third chair.
What's up?
That's you, bruh.
How are you?
He's good. I assume he's writing in.
No, he was asking how you were.
I'm fine.
Okay.
It's good to talk to you.
Just checking out.
I love you a lot. Portillo yelped really loud when I tried to move him today, but he's just a bitch.
Really? He misses me. That's why.
Oh, okay. Beyond.
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 Back and Beyond, episode 298. Colin said he'd almost guarantee that at launch there would be a SKU from Sony that included the PlayStation 4 and Vita in one box. With over a year since the PlayStation 4's launch, do you think this will happen? I don't hold out much hope, but maybe when PlayStation Now gets out of beta, the guaranteed launch bugs are sorted out. They will figure out a way to do this and push the relationship between PS4 and its little buddy.
There were unofficial bundles, right?
Yeah, there were.
Nothing officially from Sony?
I thought I could be mistaken, and let's be clear, I'm mistaken about more than I'm not mistaken on.
Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn that in UK or in Europe, like just in the European territory, like PAL territory, that they did release like an official bundle.
I remember there was a box art leaked. I don't know if it was ever confirmed, right? Is the thing. I can Google for you real quick.
But yeah, no.
You think it'll ever come to the States, then I guess.
I don't know what they're doing, Vita. That makes too much sense. I mean, I would do it and just charge. Jesus, at this point, just charge the same amount of money and just put a Vita in the box.
You think so?
Why not?
You know, I think it's sort of expecting a lot. It's a whole, it's just a lot of PlayStation in one box. Not like that's a bad thing, that's a great thing. But it's sort of like if I give you the box set to a band you've never heard of before. You know, you're like, hey, here's 95 CDs. Here's every Green Day album ever. Like, I've never heard one of their songs before. You're like, well, here's all of them. It's sort of a lot to sort of be like, I wouldn't even know where to start where I open that box, right? And I think with the PlayStation Now stuff, that's even all the more reason to hone in on one device and not a couple of different ones. Because, I mean, you can play PS4 games on your Vita using PlayStation Now. You can play Vita games on your PS4, I believe, using PlayStation Now, right? Ideally, in their utopia, they're sort of painting.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's all sorts of what-ifs about all of that kind of stuff. I mean, the bigger thing to me is, like, just get the hardware out there and then be like, it's a controller for your PS4, and it's got its own thing over here if you want to mess with it. But, yeah, I do wonder if it will happen.
Amazon France has a product page for a Vita PlayStation 4 bundle.
Right.
That looks pretty official. It's still not up to buy or do anything. You click on this. I'm on GameSpot.com, which is referencing the IGN article, but shows the product page. And even when I click through now to the project page, it's saying that you can't. It's like got the placeholder December 31st release date on it.
Yeah, so it must. So, I mean, it must be a real thing, but a thing they're planning to do anyway. Amazon France is just a bastion of leaks, by the way.
That's what they do.
It really is. Like, I have no idea what's going on over there. It's so funny, man. Like, literally half the leaks on the internet for video games come from Amazon France.
It's them and IGN Russia.
Time for Hit of the Week. This is where you go befriend somebody and play video games with them. This one comes from Will. Will says, I just got Freedom Wars, and I was wondering if one of you can help me get my PlayStation name out there so I can get some friends and defend the Panopticon. Everyone needs to hit up Will, W-I-L-L, _ Joshua, J-O-S-H-U-A. Play Freedom Wars with him.
I dropped Clementine's mug and a gun into my mug bag.
Happens all the time. If she's used to that. She'll remember that. Colin, you want a new PlayStation Network name that sucks?
Yes.
This, of course, is the worst PlayStation Network name of the week. Send them to us at beyond.ign.com, just like your questions. This one comes from Evan in Detroit. So on Black Friday, my brother bought the GTA 5/Last of Us bundle. Before he even opened it, he was asking me what he could get away with as far as his name was concerned. I told him I wasn't sure how they monitored and regulated the name situation, but to be aware of the fact that if he were to get banned, he would lose all of his trophies and possibly the games attached to his account. Soon, I got a friend request from Child Pornographer.
Jesus.
And he was playing The Last of Us. He now has two trophies away from the platinum, and I hope to God he doesn't get banned.
Is that pornographer?
It's like child, then P-U-N-O, pornographer.
So no, I was looking for a loophole there, but there's nothing good about that.
P-U, well, maybe he likes puns.
Yeah.
He's a child who likes puns.
I was working that angle in my head. I think all roads lead back to the bad part of that.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, that's really bad.
I like how he thought about it. He got warned about it, and he's like, how can I push it? How can I push Shuhei to his breaking point to come with the ban hammer for me and get me?
Shuhei's sitting there like, so come on!
Yeah, that would be great if Shuhei's like just making he's examples out of people. He listens to every Beyond, and then he immediately goes and bans that person. I'm just like, go ahead. Keep outing yourselves.
Yep.
I'll get you this way.
Shout out to Shuhei. Love you, man.
Shout out to USP. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Podcast Beyond, episode 375. As always, it's been our pleasure to serve you. As you know, IGN.com is what keeps the lights on. So go to IGN.com, read the articles, watch the videos, subscribe to Prime, buy shirts at splitreason.com/IGN. And, of course, keep coming back here. Podcast Beyond is IGN's PlayStation podcast. It's the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. It posts every Tuesday as an MP3 on services around the globe, as well as IGN.com. Then on Wednesday, we put up the video. You can get it on IGN.com, YouTube.com/IGN, and, of course, the completely free IGN PlayStation 4 app. Until next time, keep up with us all on Twitter. IGN is IGN. I'm Game Over Greggy. Colin is No Taxation. Brian is Agent Bizzle. You're going to go home now and work on Misanthrope 2.
I am.
Of course, everyone should go buy get your album. You can get it for free.
Yeah,
Misanthrope
free.
Right now.
Misanthropealbum.com. Go listen to it.
It's good. We've played it on the show before.
That's right.
Okay.
Good. Enjoy.
I do.
Yeah. All right.
Often. As you know, every Podcast Beyond ends in a segment we call Ryan's Wrap-Up, where we play a listener-submitted song. Send them to beyond@IGN.com. This one comes from Brett. I don't think it's Bret Hart, but I hope it is.
The Hitman?
For all intents and purposes right now, it's Bret Hart. Bret Hart writes in and says, what's up, guys? I was hoping you could play this song by my band, Riding the Skyline. It's off our upcoming EP, and it's titled Away. It hasn't been released to the public yet, so you'll hear it here first. Beyond fans, check us out on Facebook, give us a like, and post a hearty Beyond on our wall. Love you, dudes. Keep on being awesome. Once more, Beyond. And that was from Brett the Hitman Hart. Brett the Hitman Hart, it's our pleasure to play Away from Riding the Skyline. Beyond.
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 Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.